And then you get the...
We can start with our second session of the meeting. But before we start, I think it will be proper for us, as we invited the parliamentary state law advisor, to give them the opportunity to advise us with regard to the issue we were dealing with before we left. Advocate Jenkins, we had a situation here where we had a presentation from CITA, but the documents are confidential, highly confidential, and we did not know how to deal with that, whether to let the members have it or the media to have such documents or not. So we decided firstly to get an opinion from the parliamentary advice, legal office, as to how should we deal with the matter like that. Over to you, Advocate. Before maybe I give you the platform, that it is an investigation, but not yet concluded. There are still going to be some, is it interviews?
Yeah.
It's not yet concluded, the draft report.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, good afternoon, and colleagues. Now, in terms of the rules, the committee can decide to classify that document as confidential. I'm saying classify for parliamentary purposes. So in that instance, no one in the committee may go and publish or discuss the issues that came up in the committee about what was said of that report, of course. And the failure to adhere to that could lead to a disciplinary action in terms of the parliamentary law for that and rules. I don't have to go into the details, but it's contempt of parliament to then discuss that document. So as I understand, man, that document came in, it's marked confidential. The question is whether that document will comply with what the rules are saying. And the rules specific, I think just in terms of documents, there's two ways one can do it. One can close the meeting. One can say this meeting, for the purpose of discussing this document, should be closed. And it's a decision the committee must take. In terms of practice, there's a practice that's developing that the U.S. chair will then inform the speaker of that decision, which is not so easy right now. I don't think the speaker is in time. But just on the document itself, one can put a tag on that document to say that this should not be discussed outside this committee. I believe that possibly the media and PMG was already here. The fact that the meeting wasn't closed and things were discussed in that committee report, that's water under the bridge now. I don't think there's much one can do about that, stemming that. Similarly, there's very little one can do if a member in the committee would leak that document after reading it. And we don't know who that member is. It's only when you know which member it is that one can say, well, that was a contempt of parliament. But where we are now, no decision was taken on the status of the document, as I understand it. And it has also been retracted. It's been handed in back to you under your instructions, if I understand that correctly, which I think is the right thing to do. I think, ma'am, if you want members to study that, my advice would be that let's see if the rules will cover it and whether the rules will allow us to say that's a classified document, members cannot speak to the media about this or speak outside the committee to other members about that and publish that information. And the rule I'm referring to is specifically Rule 1574 of the National Assembly Rules. And that refers specifically to documents that were now given to the committee as a confidential document and declared by the committee as a confidential document. So you have to make a decision on that. The fact that someone has handed it to you with a confidential on it is only halfway there. Now, in that case, sub-rule 4 gives us 5 instances in which we can classify it. But those 5 instances can be summarized just to look at the last one, which says that it must be reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society to do so. The other ones, the way I interpret that rule, and legal services for that matter, ma'am, is to, the others talk about private information that might be prejudicial to a particular person. I believe that might be the case in this instance. Something that's protected under parliamentary privilege, I don't think that is the case. Something that's confidential in terms of legislation, I don't think that's the case here. Something that's subject to a media embargo, I'm thinking of the appropriation bill and so things before it's tabled, that's not the case here. So the critical issue is that we're dealing here with private information, but such information is not, as a rule, confidential for parliamentary purposes. So it must always comply with that constitutional requirement. Is it reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society? Ma'am, from the hip view, and also from the experience and precedent that we have in this regard, when we're dealing with a draft report that identifies certain people as possibly participating in irregular activities where they might be disciplined, the fact that it's still a draft report and we're still moving towards a final report and action then, I would certainly say that this is not open for discussion yet. I mean, people can be implicated in that document. It could have unintended consequences, unintended interpretations. What we want to see when we have a public discussion on that is a final report and maybe consider that concrete action that was taken by a department or CETA. So just from where I'm sitting now, I'm not sure if my colleague wants to add anything on this. I would say that the committee can say, in spite of the fact that it's been handed out and taken back, that this document should be treated as confidential. It's not to be discussed, but I want to say to all parties, man, it's a decision that the committee must take. It's not a chairperson decision or anything other than that. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Advocate. That is helpful to us. Honourable members, that's the legal opinion from Advocate Jane. Okay. Honourable Lovemore.
Chair, yes, which I respect and accept. And there are people implicated, which is a very unfortunate thing, and I think we should be precluded in some way from putting out that information, you know, from taking it to the media. But does it preclude us from having the reports? Does it preclude us as members of Parliament from having those reports and being able to study them, which we've been made, as Advocate knows, to give them back at this stage?
So if Advocate, you would like to that?
Yeah, no. From where I'm sitting, nothing stops you from allowing that. That would be a chairperson's decision. You can allow that, but of course those documents are classified. It becomes a responsibility then of members to make sure that the document that they've taken home or sit in their offices, that they treat it as such. You know, failure, as I say, when one finds out who did it, can result in a contempt of Parliament issue. But there's certainly, for the purpose of Parliament, for the purpose of members to familiarise themselves with issues, clearly they need to say something. But it's just at that level where the committee must realise that we're taking a decision. If the decision is taken, you can take the report. How do you treat that report? And that's sort of a personal responsibility issue. But there's no prohibition on that. At all.
I think we will discuss the matter maybe after the input by the audit. I mean the next input. As committee, we'll have to sit and discuss as to whether do we agree that we keep it confidential, because in my opinion, I think the interviewing is still going on and it's not yet concluded. I would prefer that we return the document back to, is it CETA or the department? I don't know, whoever is responsible for this. Because there are names of people that are in that document, there are names of companies implicated in that document, so I would prefer that we return the document back to CETA. And the next time when we are going to deal with the matter, we'll appeal to the department and CETA that we get the document to China so that people are able to go through the documents, study them, and then come prepared to the meeting with the information in those in the documents. But for now, I think we will leave the document with CETA. We are going for our next honorable item of Selamat.
I know. The, you know, the ruling is respected. It says that when we raised the matter earlier, you'll understand that it was about three components. One, understanding the documentation. Two, being able to interrogate. And three, to be able to flag the issues that are relevant around the matter. Now, I must say, it's a normal convention. A human mind can only operate at a speed.
Mm-hmm.
But a speed that is required at this stage would be not anything less than a day will not make progress.
Yeah.
So which is, at that stage, are we going to have enough time to be able to look into the report before the meeting, not at the meeting, because that is where the problem comes. We're sitting in a meeting and we're expected to engage, really. That is robbing our role as members to have a justifiable oversight, as, of course, empowered by the law. I think that is the problem that we're having. When we sit here, we could only deal with the elements of the report, but not the report itself, and that is what the problem, that's what became a problem, essentially. And you were saying now, no, let's leave it, pack it, discuss the next item, afterwards we can discuss with the committee. But now you are giving us a ruling. But we respect that, say, I'm sure. Maybe it's out of a good intent. I thought
let's leave it until we have all the other members here, because some of the members who were here earlier on are not here. So the idea is that we wait for all the others to be here so that we are all on the same level. Honorable Lovemore, we are all on the same level.
As long as
they're
coming back.
Yeah, they are coming back. So on that note, thank you, Advocate Jenkins. Yes, thank you very much for your opinion. Thank you. And we are for the DG to brief us on the implementation of UMI online project. Over to you, DJ.
So thanks, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members and the colleagues from CETA and as well as the delegation we are here with. So we will be taking the committee as the DM indicated that when we're presenting the strategic plan for the department, we also touch the issue of the UMI online, because at that time we have just settled it in March. It was around about April. Then we had the committee indicated to us that this will come back to explain that issue and as well as how we're taking the project forward. So, Chair, to do that, we thought that it would be better for us to give just what was the background of the project, and secondly, what was the tender processes which were followed at that time, and then what were the issues at the signing of the contract, and what was the project approach to implement that. Then what were the problems, where the problems started, and what interventions were put in place, and then what has been the settlement, and then the issue of the forensic audit, which we did talk about, how far we are with it, as we did indicate at that time that we'll try that within the first quarter of the financial year, we'll be able to come back and say how far we are with the forensic audit. That's what we'll also do, and give you now what is the progress in terms of going forward. The Department of Home Affairs envisaged changing the manual processes where paper forms are used as a main interface with its clients and systems to a total paperless environment where all transactions are committed online and real time. And the WIO project was to supply a turnkey solution for integrated core system based on the general life capture concept. What we mean by turnkey, it means that project was going to be delivered first and then we pay. We're not paying in stages, so that's what it meant. Then the proposed design of system consisted of integrated core business application, a set of integrated client service consoles for the DHA front offices locally and integrate and international. What it means is that this system was not only be in the country, even outside. When people are applying for visas, they will be able to do that. And then when you go to our offices, we're going to have, when we talk about this integrated client services console, it means that when you go to our office, we're going to get a camera in a booth, and then it takes your live capture and then process everything. So the manual human intervention was going to be limited very much. So in summary, the system was to provide solutions for both immigration and civic services by integrating the National Population Register, NPR, the National Immigration Information System, NIS, and the Movement Control System. So everything was going to be integrated. Hence the discussion in the morning, we're saying why he was going to deal with that. Furthermore, Home Affairs National Identity System, which is HANIS, which is keeping our fingerprints, and Integrated Electronic Document Management System were to be interfaced into the core system. So then what was the scope now of the tender? The department published a tender in April 2006 through CETA for the design of an integrated core business system with the following deliverables. Implement online registration, that means photos, fingerprints, signature, voice, demographics, and supporting documents. So really there was going to be a paperless. Introduce an integrated core business system, which is incorporating civics and immigration with a single logical database of all persons. As chair, at the end, if you are a refugee, we issue you with a ID. So now all that is going to be integrated in one system. So that questions which are asked, do we know how many people have in the country and all that, through that process, we'll be able to do that with that system. So at the end, he was going to eliminate manual and tedious processes. He was going to reduce the vast amounts of paper and show acceptable fingerprints quality at offices of application, improve turnaround times for enabling documents, applications, eradicate future back record convention. What we mean with that is that the fingerprints are taken manually currently, and then you end up with your system with no fingerprints. But once you implement WMI online, it is going to be automatic, and then that will never happen again, and improve the overall security of our documents. It is also going to improve through the use of workflow and compliance to service-orientated architecture, improve integrity through the enforcement of business rules, and then introduce, that was the major part of it, the general life capture concept for IDs, passports, and all that, and back counter for offline processing at any office in order to address the office counters, queuing, and both the way the system is going to be implemented. Right, when you come into our office, we'll have a proper system how it's been implemented. Then, the first problem was that in the tender, which is something was problematic, was this is a IT system, but the bill for quantities of software licenses were excluded. That's the first problem. And also the bill of materials quantities integrated core system hardware was also excluded. the business architecture and operational costs were excluded in the tender, which is the first problem. Now, to say you are building a system of this size with these objectives, but certain parts of it, you are excluding it from the tender. But when we were interrogating, the assumption was that the department will provide the above-mentioned services through other means, which maybe sort of created a gap. Then the awarding of the tender now. The tender was awarded a year later, which is another problem, to Kijima on 22nd of October 2007 at a 1.9 billion. So there was a problem of a lapse of time now to say once we are over by a year, it's bringing another complications now in terms of the prices change and all that, but it was awarded a year later. Although per tender document, the service providers to conform to the following high-level project schedules, which is a misnomer now that you've got a project schedule, which now is within that period, but the tender is awarded later. So it means that by 1st of July, according to that, the supplier should have been on site, and then on the 23rd of August 2000, first irritation testing should have been done at headquarters, and then they will do the second one in terms of testing in Kimberley. In 2007, they will do now all the offices, and then by May, a certification solution will be issued, and then by May 2007 there will be a rollout, and then by March 2009 the project will be complete and signed off. So what it means now, even that project plan was meaning nothing because this thing now was awarded a year later, which is one of the problems. Then because of that awarding of the tender late, then when now the letter was issued to the service provider, because World Cup was also now dependent on the system, so they had now to say, look, let us now prioritize certain modules of the project, not all of it as it was according to that project plan. And then says, fine, we will prioritize visas, we'll prioritize permits and movement control. So now out of the whole tender of 1.9, then they prioritize now the three. Then the contract was signed on 31st December 2007 for a period of 5 years. Then that problem, which now I highlighted, that the software and other things were not included. But now at the signing of the contract, the software, core hardware were now included in the contract without going out on tender. So the tender was for certain aspects and not the others. Then that resulted again now in that problem of the tender was at 1.9, a letter has been given to a supplier at 1.9. But now on the signing, this thing now is 4.535 billion rand. Then another problem, you know, when in the morning on the report, when we're saying you need to have a business case, because the business case explains everything. Now, when now the contract, after the contract was signed, remember, the tender now is 1.9 billion. The contract now is 4.5 billion. So there's a question now which says, how are you going to finance this thing from 1.9 to 4.5 billion? So in the market, there's other ways of financing projects, which as government, we are not allowed to do that without the express approval of National Treasury, because I will be committing the fiscal. That money is not in my budget. Now, it's either the thing which we call it an operational or a finance lease. What we mean by an operational lease is that asset, I will be like I'm renting it. So I will get an asset and then I rent it at the period I return it back. But the finance lease is like when you are buying your car through the bank. So you go to the bank, you borrow money, and then you pay that car on an installment. But what it means, that is that money, because you have been borrowed it, is when I have finance interest. So according, you know, to the Treasury regulations then, as a government department, I'm not allowed to go and get into a finance lease without express approval of National Treasury, because now I'm borrowing money and I'm putting the state at risk, because if I'm not able to service that loan, the government can be sued. But because people have to finance this thing, they termed it as an operational lease, which you are allowed to do. Which I would want to come back now to that issue. Then, in February now 2009, because Auditor General audit the books of Home Affairs, found out, but no, there was no business case, exactly the same problem which was sitting on the smart card. And then with that, there was no funding of this project. Now, the department, at the time of submitting the request of a business case to Treasury, did not submit a business case of a 4.5 billion rand. They submitted a business case of a 2.3 billion, which I'm going to explain in the next slide about why was that. Then the Treasury agreed in principle that fine, 2.3 billion will provide, which one can say it links with the tender, because the tender was 1.9 and the business case is 2.3, more or less there. So, Chair, why that happened? I hope that's what this marker. So, the tender at 2006 was at that 1915. So, what was in the tender was your Part A, which was the integrated cost system and small hardware, 80. Can see. I have a bit. And then, so that tender of 1915 was split properly, as you can see. Now, when the contract now was signed, the prices increased. Even at that level of 1915 to 2825 billion, and then these things which were now were excluded at a tender price were added. Then that thing now moved from 1915 to 4.535 billion. Now, when we're looking now to say why did now the Treasury business case was submitted not at 4.5, then the figures now were revised into that 2.3, as you can see. But it means now this thing moved from 1915 as a base to 2.85 as a base, and then again at a 2.3. So in total it should have been 3.9, but they did not go for that. They go for the top part, because the top part is what it was tendered for. Yeah? I'm going to come back when we deal now with the issues of to these figures. Then, what was the project approach now based on that 4.5 billion? Was that phase one? They will have to do now the full needs analysis around the requirements of the prioritized scope. Again, Chair, that goes back to that issue now that if you don't have a business case, after we have appointed a tenderer, you still now do a needs analysis, which you should have done before, so that by the time you go out on tender, that has already been done. But because of those problems, then now they have to still do that issue. And then now phase one, as I've indicated, was to deliver now the movement control, the visa application, and the permits. That is for World Cup. And then now again in phase two, genau, they will still add, genau, the civic services, which is all those modules, birth, personal, marriage, death, travel, SA citizenship, ID card, and then immigration in addition to that. Now I was going to be the refugee processing affairs module, deportation module, inspectorate services module. Then, because of the issues, because you remember now that Britain imposed a visa regime to South Africa because of the passport. Then there was a request now to say, fine, though we want to do this thing in another phase, but can you bring forward the issue now of the live capture so that now passports, we can be able now to go to about 58 offices, because currently we're at 40, so we wanted to increase with that 58, and that 58 was going to cover more or less all of our big offices, and then that was also going to be finalized by November 2009. Where the problem started? Because World Cup was coming, and an agreement was there to say, let's prioritize the World Cup projects and as well as the live capture. So around about December of 2009, then we started to engage and say, hey, the World Cup is coming next year. And there was a freeze period by FIFA that by May, I think it was 21st of May, that we can't develop any system anymore, so it must be ready. Then we realized, well, hey, there were problems for us to be ready with that. And again, even that live capture, which was supposed to be ready by November 2009, is also not coming. And at that time, the department was already committed to the value of 1.4 billion rand. So what I mean by committed is that, which whenever I talk about the issues of how this thing was financed, I'm going to come back to it, the finance list and all that. So we already have a commitment of this amount for phase one, 210 million, which is the one I'm saying we have to do the needs analysis. That phase one already has 1.150 billion was already committed, and the phase two, 54 million was already committed. And the department at that point had already paid Kijima 391 million rand together with the partners, which are going to come, those ones off the list. So another problem was that the contract was signed at a 4.5 billion, whereas the business case was at a 2.23 billion. So the question, how are we going to fund this? But the contract is already there. So those were the issues which we had. Then, based on that, we really had to consider the implications of the country, not only Home Affairs. As you know that Home Affairs had to give certain guarantees to FIFA. So we had to say, now we are at this stage, what is going to happen? We don't have a system. And these guarantees have to go through that system. And the other major issue was the issue of the security of the country. Because the system which we had could not take the passports which are currently used by other countries, and the old system we had was not interlinked. So if you come to OR Tambo, you can come out on another border, we won't have to know who was there. So it was really an issue that we could not do anything else except to take a decision. Which that decision was to develop an alternative system. So we approached the cabinet, and then based on that, that was the agreement. Then, where now SARS come in? When we... because SARS is together with us in the border post, then we, the minister, to consult the Minister of Finance, and then based on that, and then we, together again now with SARS, were to develop enough this system, because they're in the board deposit with an experience, and for us as a department, then in that regard, we did enough develop the movement control system, which was implemented in World Cup time. Then we had to deal enough with the matter. We had to further inform Kijima that as a department, we are regarding the purported contract signed between the parties as well as IBM and HP as invalid. However, this reputation was disputed. Chair, on what grounds as a department we were saying that to Kijima? Firstly, in terms of the Constitution Section 217, we have to tender for anything which is above 500,000 rand. So in this instance, what was tendered for is the 1.915. So that was tendered for. It went through CETA. Though there are issues even on that in terms of the processes, however, it was tendered. But the difference between the 1.19 and the 4.5 billion was not tendered for. So that was our argument. The second one was that as a government department, we are only financed through the budget process, which we take it through the committee and go through to parliament and appropriate it. So we do not have a right to go and get funding to the finance list. Based on that, that was our second argument, that the finance list which we have entered into as a department was not done according to the law. Therefore, in those two grounds, we said those contracts are not valid and enforceable. However, Chair, as the other party did not agree with that. So what is the process now to resolve that issue? Because we are saying this, then they are saying no. Then we sat and look at this thing to say, if we're gonna go, when we go through the court process, we were advised that a contract of this size and the value through a litigation up to an appeal and all that, if you are lucky, you might be between 5 and 7 years to take that process through the court. So we look at this thing and say, is there a possibility of discussing and see whether we can be able to resolve this matter in order to allow the department to continue with those projects, which while as a project was going to deliver for the department. So then a decision was taken to say, fine, let's get into the negotiations and see what we'll come up with. Chair, what at that stage, as I indicated, that we already paid 391 million. Out of that amount, 177 million was paid to Kijima, and 214 million was paid for lease payments, both capital and interest. So it means now that 214 is the one which we have paid what we have borrowed, because we have gone through a finance lease, of which a department, inverted commas, is not supposed to go and borrow that. In that 214, 85 million? 85 million of that amount is interest. And Chair, if you, as you know, that when you go to a bank and borrow money for your bond, a lot of money there goes for an interest. If now you can think about and say, what would be the interest at the end, which would have paid in a difference of between 2.1 and 4.5 billion, because that you have borrowed it, the difference, because the other amount is coming from Treasury, the other one you are borrowing. So we look at this amount and say, the invoices which were issued up to March 2010 were 469. Now, the capital amount they borrowed from IBM and HP, 945 million. So that's what was borrowed for their leases. So that's what they already financed, not through the fiscal, through the borrowing. Give us that 1.4 billion and then 391 million paid. So we still had a balance as at end of March of 1023 billion rand. But as we have been on record on that matter to say, but as a department, there was nothing which you can put on the table and say, with this amount, this is what has been delivered, which is working. Because by that time, there was no system which you can use. At that time, there was no live capture which you can use, but assets and everything has been dropped in the offices and all those, but not functional. So, looking at this, I want to try now and explain now the issue of how did we now get into this discussion, what process did we follow. So I want first to make this example so that by the time I come to these figures, I've explained this. So the approach which we followed is like if you want to build your house and then in that you sign a contract with this contractor and is to build this house at 100,000 rand. And then you start your project at a foundation level when the house is not complete. You found that they have got a problem here because this contractor is not able to move the way which we have agreed. But at the same time, I still need the house, but the problem is the contractor. At that stage, you have paid whatever amount up to your foundation level. Then you negotiate with other contractor or whatever to say, I still need this house. And then the second contractor comes to you and says, fine, because that house was going to be 100,000 rand at a prices of when you were signing the contract, but now we're in this level. So to finalize this project, we still need 120 rand instead of 100. Therefore, I say, okay, I will get into the settlement to pay everything but still get my house at 120 instead of 100 rand. So in this term, we realize that we have already paid the 391 million. But we're sitting with those lease payments, which are accumulating an interest at a rate of 14%. So if you do not settle those leases, that 945 million rand, after the period of 5 years, would have paid 200 million rand on that, which is just interest. Then we said, fine, if you settle, at least we are saving government on the interest part of this project. So we said we have to settle that. Settling that was 815 million rand. Then we said, what is the cost again now to completion? Because we need wire. Can we be able with whatever is already there and what we needed, be able to still implement WIO as a project. Then we costed what we still need to do, and then based on that, we said cost to completion will cost us 1.283 billion rand to implement WIO as it was WIO at that time. And in the budget of National Treasury, that amount was budgeted for those who were sitting on our MTF process, except a certain balance at the end of the year, at the end of the term, which will still bring it back. If you go to our MTF, there is that money. So in principle, what this thing now means is that that tender, which was 1.9 billion, and then which was a 200 million to bring it to 2.1, and then for us now to still deliver the WIO, we needed 2.489 billion as a department. Therefore, we are saying this is a loss which we are talking about. This is, but we interpret it with a word called loss, but to us we are saying the additional cost. So what we are saying is that taking WIO at the level where it was, we're going to be paying 2.1 billion. Taking out that FAT, which was at 2.4 to 4.5, we says, no, this thing, we do not know why you have to get into this. It can't be justified. What we want to stick with it is that tender amount, not this other FAT. So taking that at that level, we said now it means for us, effectively, we will pay for WIO more by the 389 billion million at the end as against the 2.1 billion. And Gijima, which is in their books, they reported in the last financial year, it was in the media. When now we're sitting with those amounts of the 945 million for leases and all that, we were saying, no, they must, with their partners, because when we are settling at 815, it's not the total interest, because remember, it was going to pay interest over a period of 5 years, but we are settling this thing before that term. So they had to take that loss for interest and as well as lease payments and any other anticipated profit which was not yet received by them. And then is how we said, you know, as a department, they will take 50%, they will take 50%, but ours was to bring the WIO at 2.489 billion, and then them, they had to lose that amount. Then, Chem, when, you know, we were saying, what was the reason for the project to fail? Our view, which we put in, our also on record, was that Gijima, we think, in terms of maintaining assets and all that, they can be able to do that. But the development part is what was a problem for them, because sitting for all these years and not able to put something on the table is the issue of the development. Then we said, all that amount, which is 2.83 billion, the department is going to be responsible for developing the systems. And then Gijima will be maintaining the asset which we have buy through this and the system. Hence, now ourselves and SARS now is coming in to say, we will be developing that together with SARS, because the MCS were able to develop it with SARS and implemented it. So that's what we get the settlement at the end. Then, Chair, we are saying with this settlement, we were able to save the fiscal at 2 billion rand, because the contracts which were on the table signed, which we're going to fight for them, whether 5 years or 7 years, were at 4.5 billion. But what now we have settled with is at a 2.4 billion rand. So now fiscal will save it at 2 billion in that. But another saving was the one of the interest, which we're going to be perpetually paid on the finance leases. And then, you know, in March, we entered in that settlement, and then now in April, we've already now paid those lease payments. So in our budget, treasurer now was that the money for Y was split over a longer period, so they had to bring back a certain amount in the 2011-12. So in our budget now we're sitting about 548 million rand, which now was for us now to pay those leases, which that have been done. So, Chair, you'll recall that also with this process, there were questions which we needed answers on them. One of those questions was, why did the project move from 1.9 billion to 4.5 billion? So what happened? As people were signing the contract, not going out on a process of tender. So there were various questions which we wanted answers on this. So a forensic auditor was appointed, and you'll recall that there was also an auditor general's report on the procurement side of this. So at that stage, we said, fine, now that we're dealing with this, we will first deal with this settlement. But the settlement does not remove the issue of the forensic audit. So those answers can come out. Then get the settlement, we did say we will work that by before the first quarter of this year, which is now end of June. We need those reports to be finalized. So, Chair, we only received the report on the 26th of June. So now that report, we have now to take it to the minister and then process it. And then after that, then we'll bring it back and out to the committee and say, this is what the report says, what actions will be taking it to take it process, but the committee will be informed. But Chair, we've got the report, but we need now to process it. Then in terms of what we were saying, that which is a matter which was facing us at the department, to say why do we settle? That question is really asked and is fundamental. But what we considered, Chair, is that the citizens of this country are denied of the quality of the service which they need. And for the Department of Home Affairs, we always feel that on the policy side of issues, yes, there are still gaps, but our major issue is on the implementation. And that we need a system which can help the Department of Home Affairs to be able to do that. If, Chair, you go to other countries, an ID document to be issued, it takes 2 days. But us, at the moment, it's around about 55 days because of the system. And, Chair, where we've got a live capture on the passport, if you go to an office which has got a live capture, it takes your passport, though the day is 13 days, but people are able to get their passport within 5 days because of the system. Share with the corruption which goes through the Department of Home Affairs, because if now our systems are not integrated, that's what is happening. And for us, Chair, to get a smart card, though there was no business case there, a smart card, Chair, has to have a certain platform first. If those platforms are not there, which are your live capture and a population register, which is accurate, so that when I go there, I issue this smart card to this person, it must be belonging to this person. it can be issued, which is a duplicate smart card. It can't work. So we have had to do these things for the Department of Home Affairs. So in our view, Chair, is that there is an opportunity cost which we have taken on this matter, where other people might say we should have moved with this thing up to a judge who will give a decision, whether it's 5 years or 6 years later, and say these contracts are standing like that. But at the moment, our hands are tied. We can't do anything. So we said it's not better for us, based on what we have said, to do this thing, and then after that we move forward. So, Chair, where we are now, which we don't want to repeat the same mistake of the smart card which has just been presented here, the same mistake of WIO, which was done without a business case, we really said, Chair, if we can, those people, they rush. They always rush to the point of getting the system without understanding that if you have failed in the planning, that rush cost you dearly. So we said, let's try and scope these things properly and be sure that these things, they link, and we know that if we do this, it means you need to get this. Without this, this is not going to be able to work. Chair, we are really finalizing that process. As in our strategic plan, Chair, we already said that by the year end, we will want that our life capture will be implemented in the 167 offices for both IDs and passport. And then another thing which we'll be doing, which is in our strategic plan, is that the movement control system, we already have it, Chair, on the 34 ports of entry. So what is left for us, as we said, we will now roll out that movement control system to other ports of entry. But as the DM indicated in the morning, that what we are finalizing is the rationalization of the ports as well, so that we are sure that these are the ports of entry we're going to have, and then roll it out there, and it's already there. And then with the smart card, we want to pilot it, Chair. Because a smart card, in terms of the process, if we've got a live capture, we've got a government printing works, which is able to print our state-of-the-art passport as we speak, we can be able to use the GPW for the printing of that smart card. So we want to pilot it, which we will be doing it before the end of the financial year, so that those things are back, and then go back to all these issues. So, Chair, what we're aiming at is that we want now a project which is going to be clear with the time frame, clear deliverables, and the costing, and be able to know that when we say we'll be delivering these things, we'll be able to do exactly that. So, Chair, Now, we said, which we really want to commit to it, is to say, if we're not able to deliver these things, the settlement which we have done will mean nothing. But how we will test it at the end, that decision was a proper one, is where the Department of Home Affairs is able to implement this and operate with them, as we are sure that we'll be doing that. So, Chair, sorry, I forgot now to apologize for SARS at the beginning, to say SARS was invited, but because at the moment they are working on their closure of the tax, they said this e-filing is on this week. But, Chair, as we were mandated by the Cabinet, we are doing this thing, both of us, with SARS. But for when we come to the technicality, I'm sure in the next one we'll come with them now in terms of what is the technical part, or that's what they are assisting us with. So, Chair, that is where am I online and where we are at the moment.
Thank you, DG.
We have a slide program here. I don't know how to actually handle this because I just got a note that the DG is expected to join the deputy ministers. There's a press conference that you need to be part of. And it started at 3. I don't know how to handle this one. Yeah.
No, sir. We were clear that we can't go to a press conference when we're dealing with this matter. Let's deal with this one.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, DG. Honorable members, it's time for questions or questions for clarity. Honorable Marcella, Honorable Matua, Honorable Lovemore.
Sebastian, thank you. You know, the.
And we also need to be mindful of time.
Yes. No, we'll make sure that by 5 we're done. No, Sebastian, I think this opportunity is the one that we've been waiting for quite a very long time. It's again one of those where everything has been said in the media, we read, we watched, we listened. So this one was a sheer formality in the portfolio committee, which I must say that there's nothing more to say, but rather to see how the next interaction will be crafted in ensuring that we look at the actual implementation of the full swing of the project itself, because at this stage, what came as a very good news was the fact that we are able to, you know, to get on with the World Cup. I remember last year, to those who are not here, when we dealt with the World Cup, we weren't really too much aware of what was happening, and many people were saying all sorts of things. One was that information was being held back from the department because some officials were scared to mention who was involved, who did what, and where. And yet the report was available somewhere. So I think the best time for me to engage will be to just look at the project, how it goes forward from now on. I think that is the best way to respond.
Sorry, Chair, I've got a flight booked, and my honourable friend has said that I can ask questions quickly. I'll have to leave after this, I'm afraid. I don't know if you'll be too sorry. Chairperson?
No, you can ask your question out of a love more and leave.
I'll have to rely on my colleagues and on the minutes to get the answers.
Okay.
Chairperson, it is important to ask. I just want to... To me, this presentation raises more questions than answers. It really does. Page 20, there's some strange words in there. We talk about the purported contract. There was a contract signed, was there not? It's not a purported contract. But the problems that the DG alluded to, you know, for instance, in terms, the DG said in terms of the constitution that a tender has to go out for anything more than 500,000, and there was that difference between 1.9 and 4.5. It certainly is not Kojima's fault that no tender process was followed. It's not Kojima's fault. It's either Home Affairs or CETA. I don't know who it is. I presume that's in the report, in the whichever report has been released. And that's the second question. There are actually two reports done. There's one by the AG and one by Harvey Wehner. Which one has now been finalised? And I certainly hope that we're going to see that first soon. But there are two reports. Chairperson, I don't buy, and I'd like some more explanation, that the Home Affairs has saved this country 2 billion rand. Home Affairs has sold this story to the nation. When I was phoned, when this whole thing broke, when the settlement was reached, I was phoned by the media, and the media said, isn't it wonderful that Home Affairs has saved the nation two billion rand? Well, I'm afraid I don't buy it. In the beginning, we appointed a service provider who could not perform, who couldn't perform, and this is a multi-billion rand contract. Gijima could not actually do the job. They couldn't get the services into, or get the systems in place. Gijima is no longer employed, as far as I understand it, to put the systems in place. SARS is. Gijima is only employed to look after hardware, as I understand it. I mean, please put me right if I am incorrect. So we originally signed a contract for 1.9, or there was a tender for 1.9 billion for hardware maintenance, for systems development, etc. Now we have a contract of 2.5 billion for only hardware. And SARS, now here again, I might be wrong, I'm relying on one person's word. When, and I think it was a budget speech, the movement control systems people were here. The SARS people were here, and they did a presentation, they did a display outside the old assembly chamber, and which was very, very interesting. The gentleman that was in charge of the display told me that there are over 100 SARS employees who are dedicated to developing Home Affairs systems. Now, nowhere is that cost. That's an enormous cost. Nowhere is that cost accounted for. So I don't buy for 1 minute, Chair, that we have actually saved the country two billion rand. And just to go back right to the beginning, Chair, page 8, where the DG says that the bill of material stroke quantities didn't include software licenses, integrated core system hardware, architecture and operational costs. Again, not Kijima's fault, somebody else's fault. But was that done purposefully? And to lay at the door of Gijima, the fact that that ended up increasing the cost to 4.5 billion just doesn't seem fair. I don't know, there seems to be a lot laid at the door of Gijima. So I also look forward to this going forward, Chair, but this seems to raise a lot more questions than there actually are answers. Thank you, Chair. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. After listening to the presentation from the DG, I can only wish him well. Chairperson, I want to kick off with a forensic audit. In the Auditor General's report 2008 to the Portfolio Committee for Home Affairs last year, proved that there was a high probability that there were irregularities in the allocation of the tender. That is in the Auditor General Report 2008. I want to put it on the record here today that I am in possession of a letter from the Auditor General's office that the forensic audit has been submitted to the then minister in 2007, February month. I want to put that on record. And I'm actually curious to see as to whether the report submitted 26 June, how will that compare to one another. I just want to check with the DG Chairperson the last phrase of page 24, indicating that the recommendations will be discussed with the Minister for further processing and the committee will be kept informed. This committee is the committee of the minister, and I would really like us as a portfolio committee to also have the full audit report instead of being informed. It might be just a wording problem. Some of my other questions that I want to ask can be answered later because there are figures involved. I just want to check with the DG on the general life capture concept. What amount has been budgeted? Can the DG verify? I'm not sure whether it's half a billion, 500 million rand. Where do we have these offices? And also, thus far, how many passports have been issued since we have used that concept? Thank you.
Then, Chairperson, also on page 10, I also would like to know from the DG in terms of rent and cent, what is the amount of money that we utilize there? And regarding the settlement, we understand the DG's explanation, but what I would like to find out is that we've made a settlement. Was the reason because Chijima wanted to take us to court? And if so, are we still doing, are they still service provided to us? Do we still give them work? And is that ethical, giving someone work who actually wanted to take you to court? And my last comment that I want to make to the GD, really I would like to applaud him on the gesture that they will use GPW as well to further the concept of the smart card, because we do have current good and sound relationship with GPW, is doing work for us as an entity, and I would like to applaud him for that initiative with GPW. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
honourable
member.
Okay,
Chair, you may
respond.
I think the comment from Honorable Member Mungasela is fine to say when we come back now with the project going forward, then we'll engage. Chair, with regard to what to say, the purported contract, these are the legal terms, but what it means, Chair, is that that contract might have been signed. That's why we've got a forensic audit. It says, was that contract signed right? So that's why us, we are saying that is a purported contract, because we could not understand, which I think is what we need to bring back to this committee. How can you go to a tender at 1.9 and you sign a contract at 4.5 billion? So that's why for us, we are saying those things were purported contract, because we think they did not follow the right procedure of this country. Chair, the issue of Kijima, we're not putting a fault to Kijima, but what we're saying, Chair, as the citizens of this country, we ought to know, all of us, PFMA, Chair, is not a book under the table. The PFMA is for every citizen of this country to know. So what we are saying here is that the procedure of law says if something is above this amount, it must go out on tender. But if for me, I get it without following that, I'm not saying we are at fault, but I'm just saying the laws of this country say this, and as a citizen of this country, you should know that. So that's what was said. So I'm not putting fault to anybody. We are all at fault on this matter, but we wanted to deal with something which must save the citizen of this country. The AG report, as the members indicated, that AG report is there. It was issued, but we were waiting for this so that we don't bring a report. We just give a statement, and then we don't come with the answers. So that report is there. The one now which we're talking about is of Professor Weiner. So we're going to process both, and then I'll be able to bring it down. Chair, as I said, that the issue of 2 billion rand, I said the fact of the matter, Chair, the contract which we had with Gigi, which is the purported one, in it, the figure was 4.5 billion. That's what was in those contracts. We have seen it. It is like that. But what we have after that, which I've seen it, is a 2.4 billion. So when I subtract 4.5 to 4.4 billion, that's what I get. Furthermore, Chair, is a fact that the interest which we're disclosing, we already paid about 85 million rand on interest on those leases, which now the future payments on those interests, like your bond, was going to be more than that. So that's what we're saying. The state, after we've settled that amount, we're not paying interest to HP and And Chair, that's why we said this issue of not having a business case, we're not blaming Kijima, we're saying what we're doing. Chair, savings, we are crying for issues of duplication of processes in government. Why would SARS appoint specialists which are 100? And then in Home Affairs, we're going to appoint another one and say, no, we want to do it so that we don't go to another sister department. That's what we want to push. Say, if we can have a way that if the Department of Education has already got a building, which they have paid for it, they've got a space, why can't I go and use it? So to us, those are the partnerships which we want to look at. And the president of this country has said, let us change the way the government works. So we are not sure whether when we're doing this thing with SARS, we're not saying we are changing the way we work. Because with SARS, we are together at a point of entry. And try to get those skills, you know, not even to maintain them with our government salaries and all that, won't be able to do that. But the proof is that the movement control system change, which is in our post office, we never claim it as Home Affairs and said we have done it. We only say we have done it together with SARS. And this government, we thought that benefited out of that. So we want to build those relationships. That's why we're sitting with the Department of Health now for our connectivity of the hospitals. So we don't want to go and do something where there is a benefit we can get. So it is in that sense, Chair, that we think that working together with SARS will be able to deliver a better thing for this country. Well, Chair, as we said, that the non-inclusion of the software and hardware, we're not blaming anybody. We're blaming people who are not complying with the procedure. Because if we can just comply with the procedures, a lot of problems won't be there. People have thought carefully about the PSMA, about all these things, but the issue is just that we do not comply. And the issue of the forensic audit, I've already reported it in February. And when I say check committee kept informed, no, we don't mean that we will bring to the committee what I remember, Chair, even in this meeting, the minister should have been here. So it was not only be right for us to take the report and present to the committee without the minister saying, but that report will come exactly as it is. That's what we meant. At the generalized capture offices, what there are only 40 offices currently, which we have throughout the country, which are using the system. And the concept of live capture is meant that people must come to our offices. There is a booth, you sit there, you take your photo. There is no pasting of the photos, but that's where corruption comes in. And so the issue of the costing is what I indicated, that our costing is what we're going to be dealing with it now as we're dealing with this project, so that we can be sure what we'll be doing. I think, Chair, people, they will know, it's not Kijima. Kijima was the issue that there was a letter from the department which went to Kijima and said this is a problem which we have. And as I've indicated, that in the project, Kijima will only be dealing with the issues of maintenance and hardware, but for us as a department, we'll be dealing with the development. As we said, that there was a tender of 1.9. We welcome again this GPW, again pointed on what I was saying, Chair, that the smart card now, that thing was going to be 17 billion rand in that project which was cancelled. But I'm sure for us, by using GPW, because GPW was there even at that time. But because of that silos mentality to say, no, we'll use that one and all that. So for us now, we're saying, if GPW can give us a product, why should we take money we do not have for that matter and go for a 17 billion thing, which we can get from GPW, which they can do it because of their skills and people who are already there. So I think that concept is the same which we're using with SARS.
Finish this.
Finish this.
was a long day. I think we have come to the end of our program. Since there are no longer hands, I would like to thank the DG for their presentation today. And the last issue that we need to discuss is the issue of the report. And I'm Honorable McGlue is agreeing with me that we leave the report here with the officials. And the next time.